Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
That was all 7 goals that the Dallas Stars scored last night on the Bruins. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcand, Andy Hart. It was a bloodbath last night in Dallas. Really, about as bad as you could expect. Dadonov had a couple. Sagan was getting all kinds of assists. Oscar Back had a goal and an assist. I got to tell you, my confidence in Jeremy Swayman, something I didn't think I'd be saying at this point in the season, is starting to wane. That was an ugly game for him. I don't blame him completely for this because there was a lot of breakdowns and a lot of the same problems that the Bruins have been facing over and over again. But I can tell you this, he's certainly not been saving the day or anything. He's not been, you know, coming to the rescue when this team has a breakdown. Zadorov called them soft. They are soft. Their coach is probably going to get fired for this. It does seem like every time they play a good team, Andy Hart, and they're able to string some wins together against the lesser teams in the league. But every time they play a good team, they basically get their ass kicked. That's the type of Bruins season we're seeing so far here.
Yeah, they've been embarrassed in every game against a quality opponent. I thought last night was particularly embarrassing. I actually watched a lot of the clips from the Dallas perspective, and it was stunning to me how much they were shredding the Bruins. Mm. Shredding the Bruins in their analysis of goals, almost dismissing some of the Dallas goals. Like, well, I mean, it's the NHL. If you just let a guy skate up in front of the net, he's right. Going to shoot and score.
Which happened really, an awful lot. Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. There was no pushback. Like, I feel like one of the cardinal rules of all sports, almost any sport, stop the either puck or ball, insert whatever here, right? Like, you're playing basketball. Hey, somebody stop the ball. You're playing lacrosse. You're playing soccer. You have to stop the – they didn't stop the puck. Literally just letting guys skate in and shoot. And Swayman not good, giving – sort of a lot of net, as they kept talking about in Dallas, to the shooters. But the thing that was most alarming, I thought, was the Dallas Stars were scoring pretty goals where, like, boom, 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 making defenders look silly, like, yep. Bruins defenders have looked slow all year, a step behind. But they were also getting, like, sort of the gritty, scrappy goals.
Yeah, the greasy goals. They were getting some greasers in there, too. Absolutely. They were getting rebounds. Like, Swayman wasn't reacting on the rebounds.
No.
They got dominated every possible way you could get dominated in a game, I think.
They're toast. And, I mean, they're not toast. Their coach is toast. Even the
They might be toast, too, Andy. I mean, this is a bad start.
I still think they're going to make the playoffs. I do. But this is a very bad start, and there's no, you know, we just started talking about identity and momentum for the Patriots. Mm. This Bruins team, you want to start talking about identity and momentum? Well, identity is you don't execute.
Yep.
You're a step behind on anything. You play lethargic, whether you're slow or just playing slow. You know, you're soft. You get your own guys calling you soft. You're not getting goaltending. You're not getting D. You're, one thing we've talked about, and somebody just posted this, is the point totals of all the Bruins last year compared to where they're projected to go this year. And we were right. We were talking about, like, everybody's down, everybody's trending in the wrong direction. But when you see it numerically, it just magnifies it. This is total system failure for this team. And then you see Monty doing, like, the interview post-game with Nesson with almost no emotion at this point, almost sort of just glass face. Yep,
yeah.
It was execution, end of the second, execution. Maybe he kept saying execution because he's, you know.
Right, man, it happens to be on his mind at this point. Yeah, it could be.
This to me, if you want, because we've talked about this all season long because of the lack of an extension, this was the day he became the former head coach of the Bruins. I don't know when it actually, the axe falls, so to speak. But to me, this game, this
is when
result,
it gets signed off on.
When you start players calling us soft, and I don't see any way for him to save it moving forward. Like, I saw, you know, we played that audio during one of the breaks of the morning show talking about the Bruins, and Wiggy's like, yeah, I think they make the playoffs and then lose, and but they both kind of think that he makes it through the season. I can't envision a way he makes it through this season. We talked about it yesterday. I think the decision has been made. It's when the opportunity for the specific move presents itself, and I think we are in the presentation phase.
Yeah, I think we're getting there, and I do still think, even with all that's gone on here, that all of this falling on Jim Montgomery is not inherently fair. I feel like I have to address that and say that every single time we have this conversation. But in terms of what I think is going to happen, what move is going to get made, and, you know, what head's going to roll, I hate to say it, because I do think it does let other people off the hook here. I think it lets Sweeney off the hook for this roster, and Neely in general. I think that all of these guys share some blame here, and it's all just going to land on Jim Montgomery, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Throw the players in there.
What's that?
And throw the players.
Oh, the players too. Absolutely.
Like soft,
yeah.
Spark, soft everywhere.
Yes, that was Zadorov, who, by the way, is allowed to say that after last night. Not that he had a great game or anything, but when Jamie Benn skated over and threw Brandon Carlo into the boards, a major that got dropped down to a minor, which I still don't understand that. I haven't gotten one good explanation for why that was the case, which also, and our good friend and friend of the show, Bridget, pointed this out last night, no real reaction on the bench from Montgomery when that thing got downgraded. You didn't really see him losing his mind. You didn't see him freaking out there or anything on a play that knocked out a player, knocked him out of the game, a guy who's had multiple concussions, career-threatening type of stuff, I would say, just based on the way these things tend to go. That's like 5 or 6 for him. Like, this is a bad situation.
And yeah, well, my teammate's laying on the ground, so I think that's a good response.
And he did. Zadorov went over there, he responded, he gave Ben a nice thrashing, and it didn't do anything. I mean, it's not like the Bruins all got fired up for that and then went out and won the game. They did finally get on the board, but then gave up 3 straight goals in the second period, so it's like, whatever, but that's true. I mean, you have to go out there and tell the truth, and Zadorov's right. They got bigger and stronger, but they're soft. They're a soft team. They're soft around the edges. They let guys take liberties. They let people skate right up the middle and don't punish them for it. Don't make them pay. That's been going on all year. This is a soft team, and the whole point of this offseason, I thought, was to get unsoft. But you know what I mean? Like, it was supposed
get
to toughen
hard.
Up. Exactly. It was to toughen up, not let teams do that to you anymore. And Zadorov hasn't exactly been, you know, Mr. Lethal Enforcer here, but he was last night, so he gets to say that. In general, I don't think that's the biggest problem this team has, but it's up there.
So when you say soft, I think people automatically think of either fighting or big hits, and that's clearly part of it. But there's also a scrappiness to it that's absent. And then I even think there's a lacking in, you can, like, an aggressiveness. Like, they're soft aggressively.
Right.
And that, I see them slow skating, or even sometimes it's almost like, oh, you got him, right? Oh, I'm supposed to have him? Like, you can almost see this unfolding before your eyes, and then it's too late for anybody to have him because you guys were screwing around, either not knowing what you were supposed to do or somebody being a step slow that it created the opportunity for the offensive player to take advantage of. They are a mess. I don't know that I've seen a team this much of a mess sort of in all aspects, mentally, physically, offense, defense, goaltending. Because I don't like your guy's body language right now. I think Swayman looks weird right now. I think his confidence is shaken right now. Now, he gave up 7 goals, so there's probably a reason.
That'll do it. You give up a touchdown, that's probably going to happen. Yeah.
Right. They did get the extra point. PAT was not pending. They got the PAT. But I think he looks weird right now. And I don't have the answers, and I think that's where you said it, that Monty didn't even have a reaction on the bench to the penalty being lessened. I don't think he's not going to resign, but I think there's a resignation to him right now. Just a resignation to, it's over. I don't know what to do, or everything I've tried to do hasn't worked. I'm out of ideas. And I think that has left him sort of a broken man. It's what we talked. Remember when we realized, like, Mac Jones was kind of broken? Like, he was kind of a broken quarterback.
Yes.
I feel like in a different way, we see that with Jim Montgomery. He's a broken hockey coach.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think that in large part it has to do with their lack of faith in him coming into the season. They didn't extend him. We all know that. It's a lame duck season. And really, I mean, if you look at it from 30,000 feet here, instead of a game-to-game basis, they're a 500 team. They're in the playoff picture. They've had some bad losses. It's very early in the season. But we all know he's on the hot seat. It's out there. They're letting Scoops Keefe and everybody else sort of know that this is unacceptable. If you're a Bruins fan, you should already know that, though, because, I mean, this is the team that gets off to the hot start and then fades at the end of the season. You can't fade at the beginning of the season. That doesn't work. So you would understand that this is unacceptable. But if you look at it from, you know, without that kind of day-to-day emotion of it, you're not talking about a lost cause of a team. You know, you're not talking about a team that's just can't get out of its own way and is struggling to win any games. They did win 4 out of 6, and I think that this is more a commentary on them either prepping Montgomery to be the fall guy this season in case things start to not look so good. And by the way, what's not looking good? The way that he's coaching the team or the new players and the new roster? Like, what's really the problem here? I think that's part of this that's not really going to go away. I think that's part of this that even if you do fire Montgomery, those questions are going to persist with this whole organization.
Yeah, I don't think Lindholm, for example, is suddenly going to be a perfect fit with Pasta, right? Like,
right.
They're going to click. They're going to pick up rapport right away because, oh, Monty was screwing our relationship up. Get him out the door, and everything's going to turn around. No, I don't think there's a simple answer. But I also think this team is worse than its standing and its record right now. Like, this reminds me of, remember Tom Brady, the most miserable 8-0 quarterback
yes.
in history? He was 8-0, but he knew we're not really an 8-0 undefeated headed towards the Super Bowl kind of football team.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what good was, and he knew what they were, and they weren't marrying up with what they were supposed to be and what their record says.
He was also sad that his best friend Antonio Brown got cut too, right? Wasn't that
the
same year?
There was a lot of stuff
going on. Yeah.
There was a lot going on. But I look at this hockey team and I say, I just don't think they have it. They don't have, and I don't see any reason that they're going to bring this together and suddenly become this cohesive, effective, like positive moment. Will they continue to beat bad teams? Probably. Like, well, I don't think they're going to go on like a 12-game losing streak or anything stupid like that. But I just also don't think they're going to suddenly turn around and we're going to be like, wow, they got rid of Monty and they went 12-2-1 or something in a 13-game. Doesn't add up any 15-game span, right? Like,
it's close enough.
Yeah, whatever. It was close. It was math. Stay away from math.
Sports math.
I don't see that happening. I think there's too many issues to suddenly be solved by one guy leaving. I just, like, one guy leaves and the goalie gets better and the defense gets better and the offense is more cohesive and everybody skates better and there's less turnovers and all of these. I mean, how many of the goals? Six? Were all the goals 5-on-5?
I think there was
one penalty shot.
One power play goal.
Okay, so 5 of 7 goals.
Yeah, I think there was
a penalty shot. So, like, you're giving up 5-on-5 goals. Like, there's no excuses to what is going on with this team right now. They're bad across the board, and I don't see any miraculous turnaround.
Yeah, the second goal, Dadonov's first one was the penalty shot. Everything else, you're right, was 5-on-5, all the way down to Marchmont at the end there. So, yeah, I mean, listen, this is a bad situation that they're in. It's not hopeless, I don't think, yet. You know, a couple more losses, you sink down beneath the waves a little bit there as far as 500 and the wild card goes, then okay, fine. But either way, we already know how they feel about Montgomery. We know what they're fixing to do with him and how that's going to try and deflect some of the problems and some of the blame off of where it should actually go. 617-779-7937. Mike Giardi joins the show, and we'll talk about what Gerard Mayo had to say about guys picking up guys when they're down. That's all coming up right after Stiz Get You Caught.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Caught up on what's trending. Gerard Mayo discussing the culture. It's a Patriots Friday here. Nice to have you with us. Christian Arkin, Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons. If you missed any part of the show, by the way, you can go back and check it out on the podcast anytime. Just visit, just subscribe to WEEI Afternoons on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. Now, we were talking about this a little bit off the air yesterday, Andy, this quote and this culture thing and picking your guy up and keeping track of who's picking up who and everything. And he made note of it because Caleb Williams, the Patriots had to pick up Caleb Williams after he got sacked for the ninth time or whatever. He's lying there on the ground, no teammates around him. Here comes some Patriots defensive lineman picking him up. This, to me, is part of the culture that he's trying to set. So, I mean, not all of it's going to land and not all of it's going to be all that great looking from the outside. But I found this one to be a little bit on the corny side in terms of just, all right, everybody, let's pick each other out. It's very sort of performative, I think. But either way, is this part of the culture that you think is beneficial to this team and what they're trying to build towards?
Yeah, it's not corny if it works. And we've already established, right, that I'm not necessarily the best judge of what is corny and what is funny and what is genuine.
That's true. That's Stiz, who's the corny judge.
Right. So
they'll tell you right to your face, it's corny.
Corny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if they're doing pickups, and I think DeMontre Jacobs won it this week. He had 10 of them, and, you know, they apparently chart going guys running to the ball.
They're
going to
put little
stickers
on their helmet like Ohio State every time.
I kind of like
it. You pick somebody up.
I don't think you're allowed to in the NFL, but I think they should. Yeah. I like that. I think that's cool. A lot of high schools do that. I think it's pretty cool. And kids love it. Players love it. We were talking about Mike Onwenu earlier, talking about how much he likes Alex Van Pelt, and he's the best coordinator he's had here. Well, if that's true, part of that is Alex Van Pelt has instituted, and it's basically linemen that he's asking to do it because, you know, the skill players are running around. I mean, I guess receivers can do it. The other guys run to the ball, too, when they're off ball. But there's also a lot of the linemen here that are doing that. And I like it if it works, right? Like, you got to read it. And sometimes you take these things away. It's like the mural. I didn't love that Gerard Mayo put up the stupid mural. Like, I would have quietly removed the mural and moved on from that and the whole thing. But if players like it, it doesn't matter what us outside the building
of
think
course.
Is corny, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if for whatever reason, and there's been a lot of these over the years, and we see this now more than ever in football on the sidelines, turnover chains and belts and this and that and the various things they do, they may look stupid from people outside that locker room and that 100, 150 players that are involved. But if those people like it and embrace it, then it's value. And the message definitely is valuable. Like we're all a team. Nobody's better than it. Pick your brother up. No man left behind. I mean, this is sort of an archaic message that stems from, I think, the military in a way.
Sure. I guess that's sort of my problem with it is that, you know what, you got to incentivize helping your teammates up. Don't just help your teammates up on every play. Doesn't every team do that? Like, the fact that was even something that they thought, oh, guys, we really got to get people helping each other up more. Like, that's not happening enough out there, enough to want to incentivize it. And I know that they're trying to do it for other reasons, and they think it's going to help build camaraderie and all that. But it just sort of seems like something that you shouldn't have to ask them to do, right? You shouldn't have to say, hey, if you do this, then you'll get whatever. You know, you'll be the picker-upper of the week, whatever it is. It just, that should be something they all do and all naturally want to do, right?
Wasn't there a quicker picker-upper? Isn't that something?
Yeah, the quilted quicker picker-upper.
Oh, yeah, paper towels.
Yeah. Bounty. Yeah, that's
absolutely
it. All right, so speaking of
quicker, can sponsor it.
That's right. Yeah, sure, why not? Speaking of quicker picker-uppers, we're joined right now by Boston Sports Journal's Mike Giardi, who joins us here on the hotline. Mr. Giardi, how are we doing?
What the hell just happened there?
I don't know. It got away from me. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, you were singing some jingles. Stiz calls me and forgets what show he's calling for. He's like, are you ready to come on?
What show did he say?
Host two show.
What show?
I just got stuck. It was like it wasn't working.
We're rebranding, Mike. That's all.
Yes, because we're WEEI Afternoons now. It's not WEEI Afternoon Show. It's now WEEI Afternoons.
Oh, which, fancy. Congratulations, guys.
Well, can I say it's just what I've been calling it the whole time? I didn't realize. Yeah. I was just saying it wrong this entire time. So there we go. Anyway, Mike, I opened the show, and we opened the show here, talking about the culture, and not just the culture that Gerard Mayo is aiming to build here, but outside forces, reports over the weekend about bringing in help to help with Drake May, Van Pelt being kind of defiant about that on the midday show with Jones and Keefe, Mike Onwenu singing the praises of Van Pelt. Everybody's sort of circling the wagons a little bit. Do you think that that's happening in this locker room right now? And through 11 weeks, is that a progression that you've seen sort of come to fruition here over the last couple days?
I think you start to win some football games, and that's what builds culture. So I think the fact that they've won two out of the last three, granted, not the most beautiful football games, you know, maybe the Jets were more responsible for you winning than you were for winning that game. And then obviously you lose a game to Tennessee, who was playing about as bad a football as anybody else, but you bounce back and you make the Bears look bad, get their offensive coordinator fired. I think there's there's a little bit of a pep in their step this week. Like, hey, maybe we're not that bad. Maybe we are headed in the right direction, and you're starting to get this, all the pickups and all these different things. Well, you know, when they were losing games, I think Alex referenced it in the interview with Jones and Keefe. I think they were in, like, what, we barely double digits when they lost to Miami in terms of pickups. So, like, you're losing, you're getting your you-know-what kicked in, and you're just kind of like, ugh, here we go again. We're doing the same thing we did last year, even with different people, different coaches. And now you start to get a little bit better vibe because you're winning some football games. And now it's cool to talk about culture because you're winning football games. But when you're not winning football games, you kind of keep that stuff in the background because it's just a bunch of happy horse crap that doesn't mean anything.
So we know that Gerard Mayo wants to set a certain culture. And quite honestly, that's why he was hired, because he's not really a play caller or an expert in other areas. So if he's not going to set a culture, then what would you say you do here, Mr. Mayo? How much of that culture, though, is being improved or set by the simple reality that quarterbacks change everything, and over the last month and a half, Drake May has brought a different vibe to this team?
Oh, I think if it's not 100% of the reason why, it's awfully close, because it's to that point. Not only have you won some games, but you're also – there's just an expectation that, dude, we can actually do some things offensively that we haven't been able to do since Tom Brady was here. Because the Cam Newton year was terrible. Max, one good year, but it was against backup quarterbacks and bad teams. And that was really a mirage for basically seven games in the middle of that season. Then it was crap after that, right? So it's like you finally have a guy at that position that has all the skills that you haven't had in eons. And actually, you know, in terms of his ability to, you know, run even better than what Brady did. Obviously, we're not comparing the two, but he's gave
you
that.
Whoa. Giardi Colon, yep. May better than Brady.
Well, I'm just trying to keep up with you, Andy. I mean, holy crap. You just settle down over there just a little bit. I'm getting a little concerned.
He's very excitable when it comes to this stuff. It's true, yes.
he definitely is. So I think that just his – they see the possibility with this guy of what he's capable of doing. You know, they were seeing it in practice, and now they're seeing it translate to games. And even though some of those games were, you know, they got their faces kicked in a couple times with him starting, I still made that throw. Did you see that throw he made? Or did you see that run? Or did you see when he shrugged off the defender and then threw a laser down the middle of the field? Like, even in the game where I thought Sunday was his worst game as a starter, he still made a couple plays in that game that you're just like, yeah, okay. Like, I see the vision, and I can project what this could be if he continues to grow at the rate that he's growing.
Mike, is this defense going to continue what they sort of started in Chicago? I know that's a team that's going through it right now and fired their offensive coordinator, but was that enough of a boost of confidence and momentum for this defense to carry it into this game with the Rams?
I think even though it's many moons ago that they did what they did to Jared Goff and the Rams in the Super Bowl and sort of changed how McVay operates his offense to a certain degree, I think the Patriots are really comfortable playing against this system and playing against this personnel, because I think they look at Cooper Kupp's awesome, right? Puka's physical, like, fifth-round pick, just like, where'd he come from? How's he doing all this stuff? I think the Patriots look at their guys and go, my guy's a better athlete than your guy. My guy's a damn good cover corner. Like, I think they feel like they have the pieces necessary to make it a very hard game for the Rams on Sunday. And look, the Rams, that game obviously Monday night against Miami was pretty ugly. They're operating at a really slow pace, which kind of surprises me, because I think, you know, anytime you see a good offense, there's a pace to it. There's a, you know, there's a quickness, and we get a little tempo, even if you're huddling, but you're coming out of the huddle and you're snapping the ball at 20 seconds because you feel real good about the next play. They're taking it down. It's not quite Aaron Rodgers-like, but they were taking it down to 3-4 seconds on the clock, and they didn't really have a lot of continuity and a lot of momentum going for them against Miami on Monday. And Miami, you know, it's a good defense, but it's not a great defense.
Mike, I believe that the key to this football game is the Rams' defensive front. Sounds like Alex Van Pelt kind of agrees as well. He's raved about them a couple different times. What's more likely when we're talking about this game Sunday night into Monday that we say, wow, that Patriots offensive line, they stuck together for a second straight week. They're getting a little continuity. They kind of at least met the challenge, if not won the challenge of that defensive front. Or we get a reality slap in the face and that defensive front dominates this offensive line.
I would say until they do this for two games in a row, Andy, from the offensive line perspective, that I'm going to tend to go favor the Rams side on this one. I think the Rams have all year long with that defensive front and rotating bodies. But obviously, Jared Verse, their first-round pick, has been phenomenal. Braden Fisk, I think, is second in terms of interior pressures amongst defense. No, he's actually first in interior pressures amongst defensive linemen or rookies, like by a long shot. Like he has like 30, and the next closest guy for a rookie has like 14. So they've gotten a ton of production out of some guys that, you know, some younger players, maybe a year early for some of these guys. And then, you know, some complementary pieces that have stepped up for them as well. And it's, they're a handful up front. I mean, they have been all year. It's probably the best part of their football team, even with Stafford and Kupp and Nacua on the offensive side. Like what the level of play they've gotten from that group is probably their best position to this point.
We're talking with Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. Mike, obviously the reports about the Crafts looking for outside help or maybe additional help to work with Drake May and sort of bring him along. What exactly do you think they're looking for?
I'm glad you guys brought this up because I was actually listening to you guys yesterday near the tail end of the 4 o'clock hour into the 5 o'clock hour.
It's our best segment usually.
Nailed it,
right? Yeah.
Well, and much like Andy, the more I have sort of ruminated on this, the less I liked it. And my first reaction was kind of like, all right, you can do your due diligence. And if, you know, on some of the outskirts of the reporting that Albert did, you're talking about like, well, you know, you bring in someone who kind of like knows the college game a little bit better and maybe can sort of tailor some things to him. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the offensive coordinator, right? That could be someone to come in to sort of compliment the offensive coordinator and say, hey, look, Alex, you've done it for this way for a long time, but let's make some modifications or let's put this package in because this is something he did really well at North Carolina and we should try to carry that over. And then the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, wait a minute. You sat him to begin the year. You brought him in maybe a little earlier than some of us thought you should have. Other people were like, you should have started from week one. But he's given you he's given you good play, periods of good play. It hasn't been perfect from start to finish, but you feel like from week in, week out, you see some things that he's doing. He did that better this week than he did last week, you know? And he did that better than he did last week. And okay, maybe he took a step back here with some turnover-worthy plays. But, like, by and large, it's going in the right direction. And why would you screw with that? Like, I know that the most recent example is with Josh Allen, right? They brought in Rick Dennison. Dennison was, as I think Breer called him, the OG of the Mike Shanahan system. And he got there. Rick Dennison was on, like, his third stop post-Shanahan, and every stop failed. So he gets to Buffalo, and it fails because he's trying to take this wild buck in Allen and try to kind of condense him into this form. And I think what you've seen here with Alex is there have been some wrinkles. There have been some different things that they've done that don't necessarily fit his quote-unquote system, that he's been willing to open it up a little bit to sort of cater to some of Drake's strengths. And I think you saw it even in the game on Sunday, like a little bit more play action because your outside zone stuff was working. And it was just like, oh, that's the vision for the offense. And you got this mobile quarterback with a big arm. Like, I can see where you want to go with this. So the more I thought about it, the more I disliked it. And to me, you start getting on that cycle where you're changing out offensive coordinators every freaking year. And look, you change out your offensive coordinator, what's to say the team doesn't stink next year? And then are you changing your head coach? Are you changing your GM? Like, and then you're caught in that same cycle that the Bills were for 20 years, that the Jets continue to be in. Like, you don't want to be that team. That's a bad franchise decision, and I'm leery of it. If they continue to improve the way they have, I wouldn't touch Alex Van Pelt. I'd leave him right where he is.
And I know I think he's a really nice guy, and he's certainly no Rex Ryan or hot hit coach, but I think Alex Van Pelt over the last couple of days, the media session with you guys and then Jones and Keefe today, pretty adamantly pushed back against this story. I thought some of the comments about Drake May's footwork, plus, he's come a long way. Like, yeah, I'm developing this kid. And then today to flat out say, I don't need the help. Isn't that kind of a, F you, stop screwing around. I'm doing a pretty damn good job. We're trending in the right direction to the Crafts and everybody else.
I loved it. I did. I thought that was like, yeah, it's my damn job. Like, you hired me to let me do this job. This wasn't going to be a one-year thing. This is a process. You put me in charge with the most important asset you've had in the organization, well, since Mac Jones, but obviously with significantly more physical gifts than Mac had, and a quarterback that's trying to embrace the young guy as opposed to the old guy who, you know, didn't even want a quarterback. If he could have played single wing, he would have done that. So, to me, like, yeah, let him do his job. I'm kind of glad he stuck up. And, like, I know he said, like, he doesn't read it, but, well, you know, you don't have to read it, but right. Your wife does, or your son, or your agent, or you hear that stuff. So, I mean, to me, he clearly heard it, and he wanted to make it clear, like, what are you talking about, man? Is your rookie quarterback not playing pretty good football right now?
Do the Patriots have a chance this weekend?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I think so. I think, what? Yeah, I think, I know.
Even
I
optimistic Andy's surprised too. By this, yes.
I think they lose by three scores.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't believe that. You're just saying that. You're like, you're trying to do the reverse jinx.
Nope.
The Ewing theory here or something.
Nope.
What are you doing?
No, I think that defensive front is going to dominate this offensive line, and I think that's going to cause problems all day, and I think Matthew Stafford's going to score some points, and Drake's going to be chasing, and it's just a recipe for disaster in Foxborough.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they lose by three touchdowns, then we should be talking about the head coach in this program again. You can take the culture stuff, and I won't want to hear about the culture stuff again for the rest of the year, because this is a good opportunity for them. You know, short week for the Rams, having to come back to the East Coast for a 1 o'clock game, so 10 o'clock in the morning for them. You know, again, disjointed in their last outing, so they'll be motivated for sure. But it's not an easy spot for them. And if you're as frisky as some people think you are, then this is a ball game from start to finish. And if that's the case, and you're home, you have a chance to win.
All right, that is the voice of Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate the time.
As always, guys.
All right, Mike Giardi joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. If you missed any part of that, you can have it delivered to your phone daily. Subscribe to the WEEI Afternoons podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast. And you can listen to us on your smart speaker. Just play, or just say, play 93.7 WEEI. The Boston Red Sox sat down and had a meeting with Juan Soto.
Yes!
Not just a meeting, a three-hour meeting. Must have made one hell of an offer in that meeting. Oh, wait, what's that? Oh, maybe not. We'll get into the details of this three-hour-long meeting with no contract offer right after this.
My guy.
I can hear you laughing throughout the entire quote, by the way, just so we know. That was Craig Breslow talking to Rob Bradford in very easy-to-digest, you know, soundbite. He's a soundbite machine, this guy.
It's the longest yes ever.
Yeah, basically. Very, very long yes.
Without saying yes.
And he didn't even say yes. That's true. As you know, if you haven't been living under a rock here following the Red Sox, they had a meeting with Juan Soto, and it was very, very long. Sean McAdam, a friend of the program, went deep into this on the Mass Live, in his article on Mass Live today, which I will read a piece of it for you right now. The Red Sox met with free agent outfielder Juan Soto in SoCal, Southern California, Thursday night, according to a source with knowledge of the get-together, in what was termed a productive first session.
Ooh, nice. Productive. I like it.
Sam Kennedy, Tom Warner, Craig Breslow, and Alex Cora represented the Red Sox, who offered a formal presentation to Soto and his representatives, including Scott Boras, designed to introduce Soto to the team. The meeting lasted approximately 3 hours.
Ooh, hay mucho.
Soto was said to be impressed by the Red Sox presentation, which included a video taking note of the franchise's hit. Before we even take a step further here.
Okay.
Sam Kennedy, Tom Warner, Craig Breslow, Alex Cora. Anybody missing there?
John Henry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why isn't John Henry at this meeting?
I don't know.
Going to pay $600 million to acquire this player. Don't you think he'd want to maybe, I don't know, meet him?
No, he's delegating. He gave them the authority to spend any money needed, so just let me know when you sign him.
Soto said to be impressed, took note of the franchise's history of star players in the video from the Dominican Republic, Soto's native country. Red Sox laid out their plans for the future and highlighted the crop of soon-to-be-arriving top prospects while giving a detailed outline of ownership in Fenway Sports Group. I'm sure that was very exciting, you know? By the way, here's the owners and all the other stuff we own at Fenway Sports Group. So I was like, yeah, cool. Awesome, guys. Also, by the way, highlighting the crop of soon-to-be top arriving top prospects? Did you not mention that they all play the same position and they're all lefties? Is that like, was that part of the presentation? I'm already dubious about this, but let's get to the good part here. In turn, Soto wanted to know about the team's commitment to winning, player evaluation methods, Fenway Park, and its facilities. The Red Sox did not discuss money or term with Soto, as the meeting was largely introductory and informational in nature. Boston did not make a formal offer at the early stage of the free agent process. Soto may be seeking a contract for longer than 10 years, and the total value of his deal is expected to top $500 million, with some estimates pegged at equaling Shohei Ohtani's landmark 10-year $700 million contract with the Dodgers. Soto, set to remain in Southern California through early next week for additional meetings with teams such as the Yankees, the Blue Jays, the Mets, among others, are known to be interested. They had a three-hour meeting, Andy.
Yeah.
And did not make an offer or discuss money in the entire meeting. Can I tell you why this annoys me? Because he's meeting with the Yankees, and he already knows all that stuff about the Yankees. He doesn't have to have an introductory meeting with the New York Yankees. He was literally just there. He knows about their stadium. He knows about their history. He knows about any Dominican players that ever played there and all this other stuff that you're doing in a three-hour meeting in your presentation right now. You have him there. It sounds like they had first crack at him. And you don't even talk money? You don't even discuss it? What? That's the most Red Sox thing ever. To sit down there for 3 hours with the top free agent of your class, who if you want to sign him, you have to make a big commitment and a big offer to, and instead of using that to your advantage, knowing that he can go and talk to the Yankees and not have to have an introductory meeting, they can get right to money. They can get right to an offer. Hey, Juan, thanks for coming. Here's what we want to offer you. You have him there for 3 hours, and you don't make an offer? I'm sorry. I don't know the ins and outs of this process. I don't know if this is too early on in the process to be throwing numbers around. If it is, then fine. Just sue me, all right? But come on. You're going to be talking to a team that you already played for, a direct rival. You have maybe the first crack at them. You sit there for 3 hours, and you don't even talk about money at all? Like, what are we doing here? This is the most Red Sox thing I've ever heard in my life. You want to shed your label of being the interest kings? Make an offer, why don't you?
Yeah, this is the first time that I've been concerned. I'm not going to lie to you. And you know I've tried to remain optimistic and not get cynical. I, like you, not surprisingly, have not negotiated a lot of $500 million contracts in my life.
Yeah, just the one, you know.
Right. You do it once, you've done it a million times.
The one to be just, host one. It was right around there, I'd say. Yeah.
Nailed it. But I just, unless there were some rules in place, and it didn't seem to indicate there were, like parameters, nope, we're not going to talk money. This meeting is only about facilities and about Dominican history in your organization and things like that. Which, by the way, hope we kind of glossed over the facilities part, because I don't think that's exactly
seriously
sell anybody. Like, that might have been actually a good time to, did you say facilities or $500 million is on the table? I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I didn't quite hear you.
Have you seen the red seat? Right. So look at this.
Ted Williams, he wasn't Dominican, but he was really good. Mm-hmm. He could hit the ball a long way.
Totally, he totally hit the seat, too. That totally right. Happened.
Yeah, you could hit it, too, with $500 million in your back pocket.
Yes.
But I don't.
Have you seen the Truly roof deck? Have we
it's
shown
really
you
nice.
This? It is actually very nice. I do enjoy it. It's also right next to where they shoot those Nessun shows. And the Sam Adams standing room only, of course, up there too with that bar. Great bartenders up there. I don't know how much that may have swayed Juan Soto to wanting to come to Boston, though.
I don't think it did. In fact, I think it's very, very, very insignificant in the entirety of the process here. But I don't know how this works, and that's where you and I are both just outsiders to this whole world. But I can't see what would be wrong with saying, yeah, we're willing to go north of $500 million. We just want to make sure this is clear. We want to make sure that we put to rest any concerns you may have of us being the interest kings. Maybe you've heard or read stuff about past off seasons or whatever. We just want to make it clear. We are very much in the bidding for you. We not the specifics. It didn't have to be, oh, it's going to be 14 years at $47.5 million per year. Just, I think there should have been an indication of that. And this is a little like dating, right? Like, who says love first?
Right.
And who has to move in first?
We have to wait 3 days before we text her, right? Like, yeah,
right.
It's one of those things.
But you know what? If it's the right person and it's the right relationship, then doing it immediately, if it feels right to you, is right.
Yes.
right? Like, you know, that's kind of how that works. So,
well, everybody's been going on and on about how aggressive they're going to be, and, oh, they really want Soto, and they're really going to go for it, and this is it. They've got blinders on. It's full steam ahead here for Juan Soto. A three-hour meeting, and they don't even talk money. Like, okay, is it really full steam ahead, or do you just want to sit there and go on and on about how great Fenway Park is? Like, come on, guys.
And at some point, you have to stop preparing to be aggressive, to use Craig Breslow's description, and actually be aggressive. Actually go for it. And maybe you get shot down, and maybe you embarrass yourself, and maybe he just whatever. Well, then it wasn't meant to be, but shoot your shot. This feels like you dribbled around for a while, and then the clock ran out, and you're like, oh, we were supposed to shoot before this meeting ended? They never took the last shot, and I don't like that. It doesn't give me a good feeling. This is the first time I've had a bad feeling about this, even though our guy, Rob Bradford, he had a tweet yesterday about, you know, feeling like they're legitimately good in on this. I forgot the exact wording, but that made me feel good. And then the reports of this meeting kind of pulled the tablecloth out from underneath.
Yeah, people are
aggressive.
Aggressive.
People in the chat are like, Arkin, it was a preliminary meeting. Why don't you understand this? They weren't going to talk money. It's preliminary. First of all, what does that mean? A meeting's a meeting. If you're sitting down with the guy, are you sure that the Blue Jays and the Mets and any other team that's going to have a meeting with him are playing by your little rules here and aren't going to talk money and aren't going to make an offer? I can guarantee you the Yankees are. The Yankees don't need to have a preliminary meeting. They already had him here. He knows everything about the Yankees. They're just going to make an offer. They're going to say, here it is, Juan. This is what we're going to offer you. We don't need to go through all this preliminary crap. Here's it. Take it or leave it. And you know what? He just made the World Series with that Yankees team. And listen, I don't know all the specifics of everything that's going to happen here and what these other meetings are going to be, but you had a chance to get in there and blow him away with a big offer before he even sat down with any of these other teams, let alone the team he was just on that made the World Series and has pretty deep pockets. And I just feel like they blew that opportunity.
And how many times do you hear after somebody signs somewhere or even a trade goes down, the explanation of how it worked was they were the first team involved and they were aggressive from the first minute, right? Like, I feel like when people land in certain places, that's the description.
Yes.
They made it clear their intentions from the first minute. They were the most aggressive from the first minute. And I'm not sure. I find it hard to believe all of these teams are going to meet with him and not have an offer or not bring up money on some level. And you're right. It could absolutely be because you nailed it. The Yankees have nothing to discuss.
Right.
If we're not talking about money, then we have nothing. You already know what New York is like, what the Dominican community like Judge. Do you not like Judge? Do you like the clubhouse? Everything. He knows everything. We have nothing to discuss here. Mm-hmm. Literally nothing to discuss here unless you're going to start talking about money and offers and ballpark figures. And you could have beat the Yankees to the punch. Who knows? Maybe you say $575 million and the Yankees come in at $500 and he's already like, oh, wow. Red Sox are way ahead of the Yankees at this early point, but that
even if they made an offer and he didn't take it right away,
sure.
I at least feel better about knowing that they made the offer when they had a chance to. They didn't even make one. Like, come on. We'll get into
more of
this.
Doesn't that make you believe that they might be embarrassed by their offer?
Potentially, yes.
Yeah, like I look at it that way.
Alex Spears said they only wanted to spend $100 million contract. Right. That's going to be their big contract, $100 million.
But if you have something impressive,
you're one.
Just usually people show it off.
Yeah,
like people are red. Like, I'm so excited. I can't wait for you to see what I have for you. I can't wait for you to see what Oh yeah, he's like $400 million. Did you not read the reports? It's going to go north of $500 million at the very least. So that also is something that worries me, that they're not proud of their offer. Because if you're proud of your offer, you make it sooner and more obvious.
Yeah. By the way, did we mention that there's going to be a lot of prospects joining the team who are all lefties
right.
and play outfield, so you can compete with them and worry about them taking your job someday? That's a guarantee we can make you one. And, oh, yeah, by the way, a lot of our ex-players who are not on the team anymore were very much Dominican, as is our third baseman. What do you think about that? That's not something you can say about New York City or anything. 617-779-7937. We'll get into more with the Red Sox in just a bit. However, the latest stoolie, John Gruden, did you know he was going to join Barstool? Did you have any idea about any of that? What a reveal that was to see Gruden walking into the Barstool headquarters. He's ranking the quarterbacks, and he's got Drake May pretty high. We'll get to that next.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.